Hey, Heat Nation! Welcome back to Heaters Gonna Heat. I'm your host, Kyle Russell. As usual, here to chat a little about our favorite NBA team, the Miami Heat. Lot to cover in this one. Four games over the last week. Four games coming up this week. And then also in the middle, we are at the 60-game mark. So talk a little bit about where we're at, you know, three quarters of the way into the season as we approach the final quarter leading up to the playoffs. So, just jump right on in. Last week of games for the Heat, Miami went 3-1, bringing their overall record 34-26. We start with the recaps going to last Monday. Miami is on their road trip coming out of the All-Star break. They started with the game at the New Orleans Pelicans, which ended up in a bit of a big fight. So now we come second game of that road trip last Monday, the Sacramento Kings, a game Miami won 121-110. Listed out for this game, Josh Richardson and Tyler Hero. They would be out this entire week, so won't hear about them for any of the other games as well. Get to them with the injury report later on. Terry Rozier would be out this game. We'll get to him in future recaps. And then Jimmy Butler and Nikola Jovic were suspended this game, in addition to Thomas Bryant for three games as well. But Butler and Jovic suspended for the Kings game because of the fight that took place the previous Friday at the New Orleans Pelicans. And then just the one interesting thing I thought about this in particular was there was an Instagram story went out from Jimmy Butler of him and Nikola Jovic having a dinner party while watching the Kings game since they were suspended. They couldn't be at the arena. And the funny part for me was like Butler trying to learn how to say "Let's go Heat" in Serbian and then trying it a few times and like, "How was it?" And then Jovic and I guess like his trainer or somebody next to him just laughing and being like, "That's bad." And as somebody that has tried to learn a little bit of Serbian, I can relate to that. So that touched a spot for me. Back to this game, though. So with all, five players out for the Heat, DeLon Wright would get to play for the Miami Heat, his first game since signing for the Heat over the All-Star break. He started, Swider and Elijah Williams would have some minutes off the bench in the first half, but by the time the second half rolled around, it was pretty much clear that Spoelstra would have to go just seven deep. For the recap of the game itself, a very close first quarter, though the Kings went on an 8-0 run early in the second to take a little bit of a lead, but the Heat chipped away at it, back up three by the half. Coming out into the third quarter, Heat kept a small lead before closing the last like 4 or 5 minutes on a crushing 17-2 run to be up 20 going into the fourth quarter. And I won't lie, I felt a little bolsterous. And yeah, sure enough, they came back to bite me because in the fourth quarter, Keegan Murray caught fire. I think he made 4 3-pointers in the fourth quarter. So 12 points just right there. And as the Kings cut the lead down to as close as 2 with about 3 minutes left. So this all of a sudden became a legitimate game with the Kings surging down the stretch. But Jaime Jaquez stepped up, knocked down some big buckets, while the defense clamped down and the Heat finished off the Kings on an 11-2 run to close this game out. Player of the game for this, I went back and forth between Bam and Jaime Jaquez, but I ended up giving it to Bam Adebayo, 28 points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists, 2 steals, 1 block, on 11 of 18 from the field, 0-1 from 3-point range, and that one was actually like, I think it was in the first quarter, somewhat in the flow of the offense. Again, something I would like to see a little bit more of. To finish out the shooting, 6-7 from the free throw line. And ultimately, I gave Bam the game, not a player of the game, not only for the double-double, but also down the stretch, where he had a steal and a block during that 11-2 run. The block in particular effectively just was nail in the coffin. Like, Jaquez definitely started off the run, but Bam sustained it on the defensive end, as well as matching him point for point in the fourth quarter. Moving on, interesting stats from this game. Miami mainly won this at the free throw line. Miami going 20-25, good for 80%, to the Kings 7-12, good for 58%. But right there, right, just off of made free throws, Miami was plus 13 in a game they won by plus 11. Outside of that, they also won turnovers 11-15, and then they, interestingly enough, they finished 11-30, good for 37% from 3, but went 0-5 in the fourth. So before that, was at 11-25? That's a little over 40%. They had a really great three-point shooting game, and then the fourth flipped on both the Heat's three-point shooting, you know, coming up completely dry, and then, like I mentioned earlier, Keegan Murray for the Kings just really going off. And then honorable mention for this, Jaime Jaquez. Like I mentioned, he almost got player of the game. 26 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, 4 steals. Some big fourth quarter buckets to start out that run. Like, the kind of composed footwork, methodical stuff. Just like, okay, hey, I'm going to get to the spot, turn around jumper, clean. Okay, I'm going to hit you with this move. Oh, you went up. I'm going to go under you, clean. So, again, the future's still bright for Miami. But outside of Jaquez, Duncan Robinson, 11 assists, despite having a really bad shooting game, but just 11 assists, phenomenal for him. Kevin Love, 19 points in 15 minutes. And then DeLon Wright, his first game as a Miami Heat player, a really solid 13 points, 2 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, 1 block, with no turnovers. He just fit right in. He's not going to always get minutes in the rotation, as we'll see in future games, but it's something reliable that Miami can go to if they really need it. Moving along now, Miami would continue the road trip back-to-back last Tuesday at the Portland Trail Blazers, a game that they also won 106-96. Jimmy and Jovic and Terry Rozier would all be back for this game, so they would use the same 7-man rotation from the previous night, plus those 3 to go 10 deep. Recap for the game itself, a very ugly first quarter saw Miami score only 15 points and be down 13 to a Blazers team that is at the bottom of the West. So, you know, hey, at least you hit rock bottom, nowhere to go but up. Better scoring in the second, did see the lead trimmed down to 10 going into the half at least. And then third quarter, Miami opened on an 8-0 run, and then about halfway through the quarter, they went on another 8-0 run, and by then they essentially had the lead. They're up 4 going into the fourth. And though the Blazers did tie a few times in the fourth, the Heat just steadily widened the lead down the stretch until they were up 12 with about a minute left, and then, you know, essentially rolled out a pretty professional win at the end of the day. Player of the game, Jimmy Butler, 22 points, 4 rebounds, 9 assists, 4 steals, 2 blocks. Like, we're getting the crazy Jimmy stat lines again. On 7-12 from the field, 1-2 from three-point range, 7-9 from the free throw line, 17 points over the second and third quarters, which is where the game particularly swung. That's you know, you start the second minus 13, you end the third plus 4. A lot of that was Jimmy Butler. Interesting stats for the game. Miami won this mainly off of field goal percentage, going 37 of 70, good for 53%, to the Blazers, 35 of 86, good for 41%. So that is plus 15 to the Blazers on field goal attempts, which came from Miami losing turnover battle, 18-17, uncharacteristic of them, and then getting blasted on the offensive rebounding glass, 6-15. But as I and we have seen several times, like, plus 10% difference in field goal percentage is just so massive and hard to overcome. So all those field goal attempts didn't even mean that they were able to get this to a single-digit loss at the end. And then honorable mentions for this, Terry Rozier's first game back. Again, like, that injury looked like it was season-ending, and we're only a few weeks afterwards, and he's back. Great game, though. 19 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 1 steal, 2 blocks. On good efficiency, Duncan Robinson, good bounce-back scoring game for him, going 4-6 from three-point range. And lastly, a lot of Heat fans' agendas being safe, whether on Twitter or on Reddit, because if they lost this game to the Blazers, I'm sure a lot of Blazers fans would have been clowning the Heat. To that, I pretty much legitimately only have one, I ask this in good faith to any Blazers fan. If you could go back to last summer and renegotiate, would you rather have Jaime Jaquez? Pretty sure you would. So, I'll leave it at that. Moving on to last Thursday against the Denver Nuggets. This was the game that Miami lost this week, 97-103. Listed out for this game, Kevin Love, which is a big blow to the backup center. Haywood Highsmith would get a DNP, and then DeLon Wright would come in to play some limited minutes. So Orlando Robinson would get called up for the backup center, since Thomas Bryant was involved in the scuffle in New Orleans the previous Friday that landed him a 3-game suspension. This Denver game was the last of that 3-game suspension. So Orlando Robinson got the call up instead. Recap for the game itself. Well, Miami started out just getting absolutely bludgeoned to death. They were down 20-36 after the first quarter. And again, a lot of it was just Denver exerting will. Then second quarter, the Heat did find their footing. closed the second extremely well to only be down 5 going into the half. That's a plus 11 in the second quarter. Also do need to mention, just to be fair, Jamal Murray did get an ankle injury in the second quarter. Didn't look like anything too severe, so always happy for that. He wouldn't end up missing the rest of the game, but thankfully there were no Heat players anywhere even near or touching him, so that way I don't have to see, oh, Miami Heat players are just so dirty clips all over Twitter again. Back to the game, though. Third quarter, Heat stayed as close as 2 before Denver extended their lead in the third on a 13-2 run. Heat down 13 going into the fourth, but you saw them dig their way out of it in the second quarter. Kind of hope that they could do it again in the fourth, and to a degree they did. Heat continued to push, but the Nuggets always had an answer, and I think this is like one of the most interesting things to me about this Nuggets team. Like, the Heat pushed. They legitimately punched Denver in the face, and Denver just, okay, all right, here, we're just going to go to Jokic for this. All right, Jokic is going to pass over there, and they just always found an answer down the stretch. The Heat got as close as 2 with 10 seconds left, but just could not pull it off, eventually losing by 6. Player of the game, I give this to, again, Bam Adebayo. 22 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 block. Not his best night, 8-18 from the field. 6-6 from the free throw line, though. And did get 5 personal fouls, but defended the hell out of Nikola Jokic. Probably about as good as I've ever seen him do. This was a game that the refs were allowing more physical contact, a little bit closer to like what you would see in the playoffs. And yes, both Bam and Jokic were complaining about this, but the refs did the proper thing where they called it consistent on both ends, and essentially Bam adjusted to say, okay, well, if they're going to allow all this physical contact, then I'm dragging Jokic down into the mud with me. And yes, Jokic still ended up with a pretty crazy stat line. It was like 18-11-7, but not in his best efficiency. Like, Bam fully did his job. He scored enough on the offensive end, and then on the defensive end, he held arguably the most unguardable player in the league to a by his standards, bad night. That's player of the game. Stats for this, it was really close in turnovers, Miami winning that 14-15. Offensive rebounds, they tied that 9-9. Free throws, Miami 20-24 to Denver's 19-21. The big difference was three-point shooting. Heat, 7-26, good for 26%, to the Nuggets, 12-34, good for 35%. And honorable mention here, this was pretty much like the same script we saw in the finals. The defense did great. They did good enough. Like, a really, really offensive-leaning team in the Nuggets did not break 110 points. That was something we saw consistent through the finals. The other thing we saw consistent through the finals was Miami being unable to score 100 points themselves. Same story here. But there was a version of this where, like, the Heat rolled over on the last game of a long road trip after that first quarter where they're getting blown up by 16, and they just say, nah, that's it. Or again, at the end of the third quarter when they already made all that effort to get back, and they say, nah, that's it. To the Heat's credit, they still made it a game. It was still competitive down the stretch. They are still closer to Denver than they are, like, far from them. Moving on to the last game of the week, last Saturday against the Utah Jazz. Miami hosting this game, finally being back from the road trip, and a game that they won 126-120. Out for this game, also Kevin Love again, so Orlando Robinson would be in. DeLon Wright would get a DNP while Haywood Highsmith would play after getting his DNP. I think that's a little bit more of just kind of matchup. The Jazz are definitely a more bigger team, like more into their front court than, say, the Denver Nuggets are, where they do a lot of stuff with like Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic, where DeLon Wright could be more impactful there. So Highsmith makes a lot more sense for me here. Recap for this game. Both teams started off really well shooting-wise, though the Heat would be down by 4 after the first. I think it was 30-34. Then in the second, being mostly lead changes, ties, but again, Heat back to that same 4-point deficit at the half. Third quarter, Rozier and mainly Jimmy Butler just went scorching, powering a 10-0 run in the middle to get the Miami Heat the lead, though it would still be tied 90 going into the fourth. But hey, you're moving in the right direction, right? Lost first quarter by 4, tied second quarter, won third quarter by 4 to tie the game, keep it moving on into the fourth. And then in the fourth itself, solid defense and forcing turnovers from Miami helped them to keep their lead all the way throughout to the very end. I think they got double digits, but then Utah cut it down a little bit in like the last minute or so. Ultimately, it's a 6-point win, though. Player of the game here has to go to Jimmy freaking Butler. 37 points. I think a season high for him. 3 rebounds, 7 assists, 1 steal, 1 block on a really efficient 12-19 from the field. 3-3 from 3-point range. 10-11 from the free throw line. Scored 18 of those 37 points in the third quarter alone. Smack talking on both ends, do the shouting out and one while doing the swagger walk after. All that great stuff we love to see at this time of the year. But most interestingly to me, and this is also pointed out in the broadcast, a career high in consecutive games where he's made at least one three-pointer, which I think it was either 13 or 14 games at this point. Career high. So also means his entire Heat stint. Like, beyond just like, hey, we're seeing Jimmy, you know, being engaged on the defensive end and on the offensive end, he's going to the rim with a little bit more force. To me, and more so for the long-term sustainability of this, is him continuing to knock down those three-pointers and starting to provide some space. Because if the defense has to start thinking about closing out on Jimmy, man, he's going to cook him inside. Stats for this game. Heat won the turnover battle 6-10, although they were not winning that for the bulk of the game. The Jazz, to their credit, even though they were the worst team in the league in turnovers per game, had only committed 5 through the first 3 quarters, and then they committed 5 in the fourth, in part because Miami forcing it, and then a little bit just them finally getting sloppy. So Miami winning that 6-10. And points off of turnovers 13-3, especially most of those coming in the fourth quarter. So that's where, again, that's where the game just flipped towards Miami's favor. And then Miami won the field goal percentage going 46-88, good for 52%, to the Jazz's 42-87, good for 48%. So 4% advantage there. And lastly, honorable mentions, Bam Adebayo, 23 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, with 10 of those points in the fourth quarter. Caleb Martin, 18 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, and a great shooting night from 3-4-6 from 3-point range. The defense just continues to trend up. We're now getting back to the point where, like, you throw Caleb Martin on somebody full court or at the top of the zone, and the offense is starting to panic. So, overall, this takes the Heat to the 60-game mark with a 34-26 record, and legitimately, I think, playing their best basketball of the season as we go into the last quarter. So now that we're at the three-quarter mark of the season, it's, I think, a good time to look back and just see how Miami's performing at this point, you know, now that we have 60 of the games behind us. So, for example, at the first quarter mark, Miami was looking really well offensively, but were struggling defensively. That had been corrected by the halfway mark. And then by this mark as well, we're pretty much seeing, yeah, Miami is right back to their usual identity. So, real quick, just in general, Miami offensive rating 21st at 113.4. And I do want to take a moment just to talk about just how offensive-leaning the NBA has gotten, especially this year. I think this says more about how the league and certain teams are trending and are approaching the offensive side of the ball versus anything that Miami's really doing too bad. So, for example, last year, the Sacramento Kings set an NBA record for offensive rating. I think it was like 118.9, something like that. That would not even be top 5 this year. So, very, very clearly, we're still in an era where the offensive rating just continues to boom and boom. So now it's just a question, how do the Heat catch back up? I'll talk about that in a little bit. Then defensive rating for Miami, currently 8th at 112.6. Again, that's what I was saying, Rick. Right back to that identity. Top 10 in defensive rating, and the offense is kind of struggling. Net rating for Miami, 15th at 0.7. So they are at least positive. And then pace, where they pace? 28th in pace. Again, usual stuff for Miami. So very, very similar to how we were last year. But then the interesting things have been the last 20 games of what Miami's had to deal with. Since the halfway point of the season. So the last 20 games is the start of that 7-game losing streak in January. But from there, Miami went 10-3. So overall in the last 20 games, they're, you know, an even 10-10. But 10-3 with those three losses only coming to the Celtics, the Clippers, and the Nuggets, all three of which were competitive games that had a few things broken more to Miami's favor, they could have won. So only losing to the best of the best, beating everybody else, that sounds like great basketball to me. And Miami has been primarily doing that on the defensive end, where they have been second over the last 13 games in defensive rating. And this is also on top of making a major trade to bring in Terry Rozier. That was somewhere in the seven-game losing streak. I can't remember exactly when. But incorporating him, and then all of a sudden having him be injured, Josh Richardson injured, Tyler Herro injured. You know, so this team has still dealt with injuries and suspensions. And yet, despite all of those challenges, on top of the seven-game losing streak that could have derailed their entire season, they've bounced back and are playing their best basketball at this moment. So, to look a little bit more now at the offensive and defensive ends. So, offensive end where Miami is 21st. So, big reason why they're still so low is just shooting. 17th in true shooting percentage. But they're 20th in effective field goal percentage. Essentially means that they're being raised by the fact that they're really great at the free throw line. Which makes a lot of sense. They got Bam Adebayo, Jimmy Butler. So they're 4th in free throw percentage, while 8th in free throw attempt rate. So they get to the line a lot, they shoot really well from there, and that's going to raise the shooting percentage. Like when you include that with the effective field goal percentage to get to true shooting percentage. But looking a little bit more at that effective field goal percentage, where it's 20th right now. So the way that I think about this is effective field goal percentage accounts for your three-pointers and your two-pointers. So let's look at just the three-pointers to see what's going on there. Because early on in the season, I know at one of the quarterway points, the Heat were like first or fourth or fifth or something in three-point percentage. They have slipped there down to 11th in three-point percentage, but that's still not too bad. Like, it's still closer to top third of the league. And then they're 13th in three-point attempt rate. So again, over average there as well. So from three-point shooting, they're doing pretty solid. So, essentially just means that the area where they are not doing as great in is the two-pointers. So, everything inside of the arc. And specifically, I think points in the paint and fast break points are the areas of opportunity for this team if they want to improve on the offensive end. Currently 25th with points in the paint, 26th fast break points. And those can kind of go together as well. Essentially just to say, the way I see it, it's no surprise to anybody that's watched this team that as often, they need to get out and run more. They need to get out and run, try to get those easy transition buckets. Those usually come in the paint, especially if you can get out ahead of the opposing defense. And that'll juice both of those. That'll juice their two-point percentage. That'll juice their offensive rating overall. I think that's the answer. But it does run a little antithetical to the slow pace that they usually like to play at, currently 28th. But, at 28th, I'm just talking about the difference of, like, hey, a few transition buckets, maybe they go up to 25th, maybe even 23rd in pace. It's not like it's going to jump them that high, but I think it would just make their offense that much more efficient. And if they can score some easy transition buckets, maybe they don't need to get the entire offense all the way down, which essentially just means that they can get into their set defense even earlier. Outside of the shooting part, I think they're doing pretty well for the most part. 9th in assist percentage, 15th in turnover percentage. Actually, that is an area that they have slipped over the last quarter of the season, because they used to be like top 10 or around top 10 in turnover percentage. So they do need to get the turnovers more under control again, which would also help them improve. They're currently 16th in assist to turnover ratio, so that would also improve. But I think some of that's also incorporating new players and then a lot of other players being in and out. I mean, we're still at what? I think it's an NBA record for this, NBA high at least for this season, 31 different starting lineups. Like, there is good reasons for it, but now that we're going into the last quarter and things should be less experimental, more like, all right, we're running the same things or the same rotations every night, the turnover percentage should improve. And then that would probably be the only other area for the offense. Now moving over to the defensive end real quick. And as a reminder again, Miami 8th in defense. There's a lot of good stuff to talk about here. So the areas of opportunities aren't as much. But they are 15th in opponent effective field goal percentage. And remember, first would be like you hold the opponent to the lowest of them all. So it is ranked the way that you want it to. And breaking down that effective field goal percentage further, Miami 13th in opponent three-point percentage. And while I could not find an opponent three-point attempt rate, given that the Heat are third in opponent field goal attempts, meaning they hold opponents to the third lowest field goal attempts, that's great, they are 23rd in opponent three-point attempts, meaning they let opponents shoot a lot of threes. So if they're holding them to few field goal attempts, and a lot of threes, that means the bulk of those field goal attempts are coming from three, which means I would imagine the opponent three-point attempt rate is really high. So if opponent three-point attempt rate is really high, and you're only holding them to a little bit below average on the three-point percentage, that makes sense why, like, you have situations, say, like that Kings game, where all of a sudden they caught fire from three in the fourth, and Miami almost blew that game. So that's a potential worry. But really, while this Heat defense does not do their best in terms of forcing opponents into bad shots, they do most of their damage through, like I mentioned, being third in opponent field goal attempts, limiting the opponent's opportunities to even score the basketball. Fifth in opponent free throw attempt rate, so they limit free trips to the line really well. Seventh in defensive rebounding percentage, while also being seventh in opponent offensive rebounding percentage, meaning if that shot's not going in, it's usually going to Miami more so than it is going back to their opponents. Eighth in opponent turnovers, being 18th in steals per game themselves. So they're also just, literally just, hey, give me that ball. You're not going to get to shoot it if I just get it from you immediately. This defense does a great job of controlling the possession game. And then also, to a degree, doing a great job of limiting opponents' fast breaks, being 6 in opponent fast breaks points per game, and also 6 in opponent points in the paint per game. So doing a good job of walling off the paint. I think that's where you see a lot of, like, Miami zone defense, for example, and all the great work that Bam Adebayo does really shining there. And it's pretty much just leaving those three-pointers open and then hoping that it don't go in. And you know, that's... they're slightly not, because they're 13th in opponent three-point percentage. They are 12th in opponent second-chance points, but then again, I see that as a situation kind of in line with, like, hey, they do a good job of limiting the attempt, but if they do get the attempt, if they get the offensive rebound, they're usually getting a high-quality shot up. So to me, that makes sense. And I also think that might be a situation where you have certain teams that can really exploit the offensive glass against Miami because of their lack of size. So I'm not too concerned about 12th in second chance points. Similarly, not too concerned with 13th in opponent points off of turnovers. I think that's more so a factor of what's going on in the offensive end, where they're 15th in turnover percentage. So if Miami can just do a better job of taking care of the ball in the offensive end, there'll just be less opportunities for the opponent to get points off of their turnovers, and therefore that'll improve as well. Really, it's just like, it's like the big bludgeoning teams, like a Denver or even like a Celtics, the way that they use Porzingis. Those are, for the most part, the only teams that really concern me on the defensive end for the Heat. Overall, though, this is the same defensive-leaning Heat team that just needs to find some answers on the offensive end. Again, that's why they're so dogged about, like, Tyler Hero and the ceiling that he could raise for this team. But at least for now, they're firmly in their identity, that defensive-leaning, drag-into-the-mud team, as they go into the last quarter of the season towards the playoffs. Now, let's finish things up as we usually do, looking ahead to the next week for the Miami Heat. First up, the injury report. Kevin Love listed day-to-day with the heel injury. I don't know if he had that during practice or during the game, but he missed his last two games of last week. Then Tyler Hero and Josh Richardson are only listed as out with knee and shoulder injuries, respectively. No real clear idea when they'll be back. Like, they're literally just listed out on a game-to-game basis at this point, with not saying, like, hey, we'll check in a week or whatever. So, essentially, you know, maybe they could be back tomorrow, they could be back next week. Oh no, we'll see what happens when we get there. But that's pretty much it for the injury report. A quick look over at standings watch. The Heat are still in the mix of this 4-8 chunk in the East, where these are five teams that are all separated by two games. So very easy for one team to be eighth at one point and then be fourth, you know, even within a day or two of originally being eighth. For the record, they are the New York Knicks, Philadelphia 76ers, Orlando Magic, Miami Heat, Indiana Pacers. These five are going to be vying for position through the rest of the season. And the last week did not really give Miami much opportunity outside of just, like, general standings to try to move up. I don't think this week will not give them much opportunity either. We're really looking for matchups against those other teams through the last weeks of the season. Now, for the game plan, the Heat will finish up a two-game homestand before having a really rough road back-to-back, as you'll see in a little bit, Thursday, Friday. And then they come back for another two-game homestand that we'll go through next week as well. So first, we have the game tomorrow against the Detroit Pistons, where the Heat will host them. This is a Pistons team with a 9-51 overall record, have not even won 10 games yet. They are last 15th in the East. Miami already up 1-0 in a best-of-4 against them. Literally the last game that they played, the season opener. It was a game Miami almost blew at the end. It's crazy, crazy to think that they have not played another game since then, and they still have two more after this. But Miami already up 1-0. Injury reports, they had one player, Grimes. I'm not too familiar with him. He's listed day-to-day out yesterday. I'm not sure how impactful he is. Players to watch out for on the Pistons, the only one I know of for certain that's legitimate is Cade Cunningham, and he can be a little bit turnover-prone, but I believe he might have cleaned some of that up later on in the season. Looking at the stats for the Pistons, and for the stats part, I'm trying to pare this down and not just throw a bunch of numbers, just maybe like one or two that are the most intriguing or that fit together. But this is a Pistons team that is just straight up bad when you look at the stats. 25th in offensive rating, 28th in defensive rating, though 9th in pace. At least they like to get out and get their cardio. For things that they do well, first in two-point attempts per game, which means they're 28th in three-point attempt rate, third, so they do not put up a lot of threes. They're just trying to get inside. And then they are third in opponent three-point attempts. They do a good job of limiting threes, which is something Miami at least tries to get to a little bit. For things that the Pistons do badly, 29th in turnovers. That could be an area for Miami to start getting their turnovers right. 30th in personal fouls and 30th in opponent free throw attempts. So that's going to go right into Miami getting to the free throw line. And 22nd in opponent three-point percentage, despite being third. So they do a good job of limiting opponent threes, but opponents are shooting really well when they do get those open looks. And then the storyline that I'm following, the Heat do have a really rough week. So pretty much it's just, can they pick up the easy win? The Pistons, I do think, are a little sneaky competitive. Like, they've pushed the Celtics at home. They've pushed a number of teams. So despite their record, they have been more competitive than not in the games. Just really, it's the question of, like, can you go in there, just smack them in the face and be like, hey, no, we the Miami Heat are playing for something here. We're playing for playoff seeding. Y'all are not playing for anything at all. And just win it outright and have an easy game. Because it does not get any easier into the week. Thursday at the Dallas Mavericks is a Mavericks team that currently has a record of 34-27, 8th in the West. First of two meetings against Dallas Mavericks. Looking at their injury report, they're all good. Players to watch out for, Kyrie Irving is just amazingly skilled and creative, and just I don't think there's any way to stop that dude if he's legitimately on. But the main problem you got to watch out for, and the one that Kyrie is primarily backing up, Luka Doncic, who is just like a one-man offense at this point. It's like a crazy mix of like LeBron and James Harden. And he just gets these spots, and he complains so much. But he's so freaking good and so hard to stop. Looking at the stats for the Mavericks team, you pretty much see that they are a definite offensive-leaning team that is trying to outscore people. 8th in offensive rating, 22nd in defensive rating, 7th in pace. So, things that the Mavs do well. 12th in field goal attempts, while 13th in field goal percentage. So, they get a lot of attempts up, and they get a lot of high-quality looks up. Makes sense for an offense that the ball is primarily in the hands of either Kyrie Irving or Luka Doncic. They're also second in three-point attempts, so that's a lot of, like, Doncic handling the ball, driving in, driving kick kind of stuff. Fourth in turnovers. Again, a lot of Luka and Kyrie handling the ball, not a lot of opportunities to turn the ball over. So that's going to be a game that's going to be difficult for Miami to force turnovers on. For things that the Mavs do bad, though, and you probably noticed a lot of things that I mentioned for good were offensive-leaning things. Well, it's because a lot of the things that the Mavs do bad are defensive-leaning. So, like I mentioned, 12th in field goal attempts, while 13th in field goal percentage. That's great for the offensive end. But on the defensive end, the Mavs 20th in opponent field goal attempts and 20th in opponent field goal percentage. So similarly, because of that high pace, they're giving up a lot of attempts, and they're not a great defensive team, so they're giving up a lot of high-quality looks and converting those. And then they're also 23rd in opponent two-point percentage. So that could be an area where maybe Miami goes more so inside, like Bam Adebayo, Jimmy Butler bludgeoning inside kind of thing to generate some easy looks. And then the storyline for this game. The Heat have been playing really well in the defensive end lately. Like I mentioned, second in defensive rating over the last 13 games. So can that continue against Luka Doncic, who just is an absolute defensive buster? And then the other part on top of this is pretty much how can the Heat just conserve some sort of energy for the road back-to-back that they have the next day? I think it would pretty much take them blowing out the Mavs to have that happen, so please sign me up for that. But if the opposite ends up happening, where they start to get blown out early in the fourth quarter, I wouldn't be surprised if Spoelstra pulls the plug a few minutes early, just a few minutes earlier than he normally would, just to be like, all right, we're going ahead and get some rest. Because the next night, Friday night, they have a road back-to-back against the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Thunder's team currently has a 41-18 record, first in the West, and the Heat are already down 0-1 after the mid-January loss where they came in. That was a really, really well-played game, but one of the takeaways from that game was just like, holy crap, the Thunder are really good and athletic. Looking at their injury report, just the Jalen Williams that primarily plays off the bench is listed out. Well, he was just out yesterday, listed day-to-day technically. So they're, for the most part, pretty healthy. Players to watch out for, you got a really nasty big three of SGA, who's just a legitimate MVP candidate and a phenomenal scorer, and Luke Key, pretty solid defender, especially great at getting into passing lanes and generating steals. And then, of course, after him, Chet Holmgren leading Rookie of the Year, and then kind of quietly, the really great Jalen Williams, who's just a phenomenal all-around forward. I think he had a triple-double against us last time. He was the one that I remember from that game being like, okay, I've heard this guy's really good, and then at the end of the game I was like, yep, I see where all the talk's about. Looking at stats for the Thunder, I mean, it's really a great Thunder team when they're first in the West. Third in offensive rating, fifth in defensive rating, 10th in pace, so just great on both ends. Things that they do well, 16th in field goal attempts, but second in field goal percentage, so kind of like a better version of what the Mavs are trying to do. And then for the opponents, they are 19th in opponent field goal attempts, while third in opponent field goal percentage. So they do a similar style on the other end where, like, they're letting opponents get a fair amount of attempts up, but really limiting them to bad shots. This is also Thunder team, fifth in turnovers, third in steals. So I think the third and steals part is where I was saying, like, SGA gets out, pokes the ball. That could be a bad game for Miami committing too many turnovers. And then them being fifth in turnovers, like, this could be a hard battle for the Heat to win, which is one that they have relied upon this season, usually, to win games. But for some things that the Thunder do badly, 26 in opponent three-point attempts while being 12th in opponent three-point percentage. So if Miami can get bombing from three, that could be one way to kind of bring things open and, you know, get some scoring going. 19th in personal fouls while being 23rd in opponent free throw attempts. So that could be something, hey, Jimmy, bam, go inside, try to get some fouls on them, maybe make them hesitate a little bit, or at least get to the line for some easy points, and so the Heat can set up their defense. And then their last in opponent offensive rebounds, which is usually not an area that Miami tries to exploit, but maybe they could lean into it with, like, Jovic, Kevin Love, Bam Adebayo, just all trying to crash the offensive glass a little bit harder. So, storyline for this Thunder game is, for me, is like, what can Miami show on the second night of a back-to-back, a road back-to-back against the best team currently in the West? Thunder do have Thursday off, so they will also have the rest advantage. Honestly, if the Heat get smoked, wouldn't be too surprising. I do still think they can at least put up a competitive game. And I think for really looking at this road trip part of the schedule this week, it's going to be more so about can they steal that win against the Mavs Thursday, and then whatever happens Friday just is what it is. So after Friday, the Heat will return home for the two-game homestand this Sunday, where they will host the Washington Wizards, the Wizards team that has a terrible 9-51 record, 14th in the East. I guess they own some tiebreaker over Detroit. And the Heat are already up 2-0 against them after two really solid wins. Like, one that kicked off the seven-game win streak at the beginning of the season, and then another one, I can't even remember, I think it was like December maybe. But the Heat took care of business in 0 to be up 2-0. Looking at the injury report for the Wizards, they are all good. Yeah, I guess. Players to watch out for on the Wizards, I guess Kyle Kuzma. He is their leading scorer. I do think he's like a legitimate all-around good player. But he's not like an all-star, definitely not all-NBA player like you're you know, like an SGA or something like that. So I put a little question mark next to that. I guess maybe Jordan Poole as well, since he's back to coming off the bench, and that was usually where he thrived at the most for the Warriors. So maybe that. I don't know. Looking at stats for the Wizards, they are 26th in offensive rating, 29th in defensive rating, though first in pace. They really like to get their cardio, even more than the Pistons. Things that they do well, they're 5th in opponent turnovers, so that could be something that he got to watch out for. And they're 4th in field goal attempts while being 16th in field goal percentage. So that's not terrible. They're at least getting decent quality looks up and then just getting a high volume of them. For things that they're bad at, though, 29th in opponent field goal attempts and opponent field goal percentage. So just absolutely porous on the defensive end. 21st in turnovers themselves, so they're coughing up the ball just about as much as they're getting it from the opponent. 22nd in personal fouls, 26th in opponent free throw attempts. I mean, that is the record, right? Rack up a bunch of fouls on them, get to the free throw line for easy points. Miami loves that. Thank you very much. And the storyline for this game, regardless of how that road trip goes, the Heat need to take advantage against their bad opponents like the Wizards and the Pistons, who have nothing to play for. So at the very least, like, the Wizards and Pistons should be the must wins of the week. So can Miami win their must wins to keep pace in, again, that crazy five-game bracket in the East? After this Pistons game, the homestand will continue against the Denver Nuggets. Oh, that'll be fun. I think that's Tuesday, so that's not until next week. We'll cover that next pod. So, also next week, we'll see what stands out. I don't exactly have a concrete plan for what I'm going to talk about for the middle segment next week. So, we'll see what comes to me. But for now, I do thank you for hanging around. This went, 10 minutes longer than I usually go. That'll be all for this episode, though. Please, if you can, follow the pod at Heaters Heating and myself at KBR Heat Culture off of X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it. Also, check out the other great pods we have off of OGG Basketball, Celtics Lab, Brooklyn Buzz, Full Access Pacers, Corey Waldron. They always do great stuff, as usual. Links for everything are in the show notes, as usual. I'll be back next week. So until then, hope you all have a great one, Heat Nation.